Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'll turn the meeting over to Mr. Bill Hirsch. Sir, you may begin.
Hello, and welcome to the call. We're happy to have you join us on this first technical assistance call from the National Training and Dissemination Center. And the focus of this call is the VISTA system for education, including lab components 7 and 11, which we know that you all have been told about. The call is starting in this talk-only mode, but we will actually leave plenty of time for question and answer. We know that you have a lot that you wish to talk to us about. So I am here, and you'll be hearing from others, including Patricia Abbott from Johns Hopkins University, Michael Vaughn, also from Johns Hopkins, and Larry Scott from Lane Community College, who's also part of our Curriculum Development Center at Oregon Health and Science University, which I also direct. The purpose of the call, as I stated, is to provide some technical assistance for getting the VISTA system up and running. I think many of you know that VISTA is the electronic health record system that was developed and has been in use for many years by the Veterans Administration. It is an open source system that the VA has graciously agreed to work with us to try to use for educational purposes. We hope that you will work with us and we will work with you to try to make this solution work. As those of you who have started to work with it know, it's not an ideal solution yet, and that's really reflective of a larger problem in the field. Some of us who are speakers and probably some of you who are listening have been educators in this field for some time, and there have not been good electronic health record instructional solutions available, particularly for teaching about the internals of systems, being able to configure them and use them in more than just a user kind of way. So our purpose in working with the VA is to try to create educational materials that will help your students in the programs that you've been funded for from the Office of the National Coordinator to be able to learn about using and configuring and later also installing and maintaining electronic health record systems. We know that most of your students will not go out and work in the VA, but the VA system represents a state-of-the-art system that has things like clinical decision support, computerized order entry, and so forth, that students will hopefully be able to map other systems they might use in jobs that they take, where they might be using systems like Epic and Cerner and so forth. As we developed these materials, we did look around at some other options, and really this one was the only one that came together in terms of having the best price, which there really is no cost, the community colleges, and it also gave us the most access to the system. I know that some of you in your programs, as we do in our graduate program at Oregon Health and Science University, use the HEMA virtual lab, but that doesn't really provide access into the internals of systems for configuration and so forth. So we hope that you will work with us, and again, we will work with you to try to make this less than perfect solution work. We've spent a lot of time over the last month or two working with different configurations of Windows, XP, Vista, Windows 7, 32-bit, 64-bit. We've encountered a number of challenges along the way. We've tried to document them, and as we go forward, we will share those with you so that we can hopefully find solutions that will work for you. We've tried a lot of different configurations and almost always have been able to get the system up and running. Not unfortunately without challenge, but we are going to put a technical support solution in place. We've already been working with many of you by email. There'll be a feedback process, and we hope over time that we'll find other and possibly better solutions, because in addition, many of us who are developing curricula, even though our primary responsibility in this project is for you, we actually have interest in our own programs and being able to have this sort of functionality. So at this point, I will turn it over to Patricia Abbott of Johns Hopkins, and who will give us a little bit more perspective on this. Patty.
No, thanks, Bo. And hi, everybody. I'm over here on the east coast of the United States, where it's raining, but at least it's warm. I know if there are any of you joining up in, I believe, the Dakotas, it was on the national news this morning that you guys have experienced the lowest barometric pressure ever recorded in the United States that wasn't associated with a hurricane. So if you're up in that area, our apologies. We're thinking about you. And I'm still wearing sandals, not boots. So anyway, to get back to what I was supposed to be doing in regards to this agenda is I will echo what Bill said. It has been a very interesting summer, a very, frankly, stressful summer, but a very educational summer. So I think we've all learned a lot. And I'm speaking on behalf of all the curriculum development centers, I think, is that we really look forward to working with everybody because, you know, this isn't just, as Bill said, this isn't just a community college problem or a university problem. It's a nationwide problem. I mean, we have students crawling out of the woodwork from everywhere saying, please find a solution to this because we also need a training area for our students, regardless of whether they're nurses, doctors, systems engineers or whatever. Everybody's looking for the same thing. So it has been a lot of trial and error, but I think we've made huge progress. So let me just give you just a brief overview, some history, and maybe where we're going to head in the future with this, with your help, because we are not the be-all, the end-all, and as I've said to a couple of my colleagues I've been working with offline at Hopkins here, we're working very closely with our community college colleagues, and they're sort of really helping us to keep our not only our nose to the grindstone, but our nose to a realistic grindstone of what can possibly be achieved under the time constraints that we have. So as we started with this project of trying to come up with how are we going to create a lab that at any one time maybe up to 10,500 people could be banging on, so we knew it was going to have to be big and it was going to have to be pretty robust. And because, as Bill said, you know, it really required that we tested many different platforms and delivery modalities. And we are also, of course, constrained by the fact that the VA system, VISTA system, does not run on, well, was not designed to be run on a Macintosh, and it also only runs in 32-bit XP. So everything we had to do was to really try to figure out how we could cobble together a roundabout way to make that work for everybody. So, you know, just going back in time a little bit, we really were asked to try to make this laboratory available to everybody, regardless of their resource level. So we have, community college partners, and even in my own area here, we have some that are in very wealthy counties, and then we have one of, you know, our community colleges that are right in here in the base of Baltimore City. And they don't have much resource, and you would think that even though they're right down the road from Hopkins, for any of you that had visited Baltimore, we didn't film the series The Wire here because of our bucolic country scenes. You know, you can take five steps away from this university and you're in Armageddon. So we were really charged to try to make this available to everybody, regardless of resource levels. And that would also mean that we had to find a way to make this usable by people who cannot access robust internet. And I know this seems, you know, maybe sort of counter, but we do have folks all over the place that do not have full internet access. So that's why the FCC came out with their last mile project and. So we had to not only think about how we could deliver this in over the web and in like a learning lab, but also how could we press this thing into something that could be distributed like on a DVD for people who are disconnected, disenfranchised. That's part of the principle behind the whole workforce program, is to make this open for everyone. We also had to make it usable for those who really couldn't afford to buy into like an ASP model. So as Bill mentioned, we did work with AHIMA. We looked at the VLAB. It was fabulous for Component 7, which is the working with HIT systems. But as Bill alluded to, they were not quite ready to let us go in and configure the back end of their system, which is another requirement. So, and then, of course, the last thing was it had to be, quote-unquote, free. So we couldn't have a commercial product. And so we ended up with the VA. It was a really wonderful ONC. Dr. Blumenthal worked with Mr. Baker from the VA. There were very high-level discussions, and they allowed us to take a copy of FOIA VISTA, which is the Freedom of Information Act VISTA, so we don't have anything that's illegal. But, of course, what happened was that in order for them to release that, they had to strip out some of the functionality that was proprietary. So that added, as Bill said, another level of complexity to being able to roll this out in a way that worked for most as easy as possible. Where we think we would like to go in the future with this would be to continue to work, especially with you guys. I mean, truly, we need the feedback from our students and our customers and our clients to be able to say what works with this and what doesn't. And, you know, we'll do our damnedest to go backwards and try to make this work because, again, it's not us against them. I think we're all working really towards the same goal. So we're really counting on feedback from you guys about, you know, the questions you have and can you fix this and this isn't working. And we really will do our best to try to make it work for everybody. And that's pretty much what we've been doing all summer, besides, you know, being fitted for straitjackets and having electroshock therapy. And we've done our best, and we look forward to redoing this. I mean, we have two more iterations, and it's really important that we all work together and we get feedback from you guys to see how to make it better.
Great. Thank
you. And I think with that, I guess, who's next? It's I don't really have anything else to say. If you have any questions at the end, terrific. Otherwise, I guess I'll just turn it back to Bill and let you go from there.
Yeah, thanks. So, actually, we were also going to have Michael Vaughn speak. Michael has spent a lot of time troubleshooting with us on different configurations, and he's developed some of the help documents and so forth. He's going to give us a brief overview, and then what we're going to do after that is allow you to ask questions directly. The phone setup we have allows you to kind of go into a queue where you can ask questions, and it's moderated by an operator, and then any number of the speakers will talk. So let me turn it over to Michael.
Thank you, Bill. I didn't want to say too much other than to say that, you know, all of the technical problems, and I've been looking at the survey and trying to kind of get some themes out of what problems people are having. One thing you need to understand with Vista, they, you know, it's deployed typically in a controlled environment with controlled computers that are probably all running Windows XP. And so we're taking this product and trying to push it out to any number of computers that are not controlled, and you never know what's going to come in. And I think that's probably the biggest problem that everyone is seeing, particularly for students installing this DVD on their own computers. We've done a lot of testing of what I think and what we all think are some common scenarios, the typical kind of system that you'll see come into your departments. And we've been able to work around most everything. I know that there's a long list of issues, and some of these things, unfortunately, would be very difficult to pinpoint exactly what the problem is without doing some very careful troubleshooting and working, looking at some certain things. I'm happy to point out some common things that we'll look at. The one thing I did want to go ahead and demonstrate what I think might be the most common scenario with a student laptop, which especially anything bought recently, which would be Windows 7, some version of Windows 7, probably running 64-bit. And I've created a video that I'll go ahead and attempt to show on the Adobe Connect session that we have open. I will ask that everybody, all of the presenters, please mute your line so we don't have an echo problem. The audio narration for this video will be coming through the computer, so you may need to turn your computer speakers up in order to hear it. I'll go ahead and start that now. And again, that is an example, the installation on Windows 7. The installation on Windows Vista would be about the same. The dialog boxes look a little bit different. On Windows XP, which I didn't demonstrate, the installation is pretty straightforward. You just simply insert the CD. If it pops up, you just click Install All. You don't have to do the business with the CD starter file on the DVD. The reason why those modifications are required on Windows 7 or Windows Vista is user account control, which is a security feature that was added starting with Windows Vista. If you are able to install the DVD and you don't have to do the business with a CD starter, my guess is that you probably have user account control disabled, which would be another workaround way to get it to install, but I wouldn't recommend it because it defeats one of the major security improvements with Windows Vista and Windows 7. Bill, shall I go ahead and go through some of the points that people have asked specifically and address some of those questions, or do you want to go ahead and open that up to question and answer?
How much would you have to say? I mean, it might be good to kind of for folks to hear about some of the specific, because it seems like a number of these problems have come up, repeatedly. So maybe why don't you go through them quickly, and then we can open it up there.
Okay, I will. And I'll start with, I went ahead through the survey, this results that we received, and this was about sometime yesterday evening. So if anything was submitted since then, I haven't captured it. But there were just a few kind of common things that came out of it I'll try to address. One of the participants was having trouble doing image capture with the students. I think that's actually one of our assignments, Patty, something that you requested them to do. That's really kind of a separate issue from the Vista installation. Someone was talking about a tool wire option. I'm not familiar with what that is exactly. I know what tool wire is, and perhaps they have some EHR option. Again, I think that's kind of a broader question than what we're addressing here in this call. Is it Boot Glen Community College? I apologize if I'm not pronouncing that correctly. Had an error where the CPS chart, the version of the Vitals Viewer was not correct. I know that that was a problem we had with one of the earlier versions of our DVD that was corrected, so my guess would be that they might have been using an earlier version. But someone complained that the PuTTY access to the back end of the app would not recognize the user and password ID supplied by the install documents. We did test all of those IDs. Again, this was a problem we know in an earlier version of the DVD where what was in the README file for the usernames and passwords or the verifying codes to use did not match what was in the system, but we corrected that with a more recent version of the DVD. So make sure that you're using the proper version. We've seen some errors related to WSAE connection refused. Those I'm going to address when I go to the TIPS document that Corky has prepared. Some people had some problems with Virus Protector recognizing Vista as a virus. It would not allow it to load. A workaround there is to disable your virus protection software when you install the software. It conflicts with other versions of Vista previously installed. This is a known problem. If you have used Vista in other forms, such as the VA's demo system that they have online, if you have that installed, that can create problems with the installation of this system. The DVD includes an uninstall all option. If that doesn't work, you can and uninstall cache manually using add remove programs or program features, depending on your version of Windows. And the README file documents all of the directories that the installation creates, so if necessary, you can manually delete those directories referring to that document. Number nine, the installation program edited the host file and added an entry for broker server, but instead of adding a new line, it appended to an existing entry. Yes, the installation does add an entry to the host file, and that's kind of a technical thing on the back end. For those of you who are IT people and know, in a Windows, I think it's drivers, et cetera, there's a file that you can add entries to that will resolve names to IP address, and it is necessary for that change to be made for the for Vista to understand how to get to cache and the back-end database. Normally, that should work just fine. If it doesn't, there is a workaround, which will be in the TIPS document that we'll provide to you. And you can manually modify the shortcut to the Vista CPRS shortcut to point specifically to the local IP address and server port number. And then there was an error, a missing bin file during installation. That is kind of news to me. That would be an example of something that we haven't seen and we'd have to troubleshoot. I think I won't go to the specifics. I think that covers most everything. Some of the details are to address some of the things I brought up are going to be available in a TIPS document that we will make available to you that has some of the specific workarounds that we've described listed specifically. So I think I'll end it there. Bill, maybe we want to go to Q&A now.
Yeah. Let me just make a few last comments before we go to Q&A. There is Michael said, there's a TIPS document that we've developed, and we plan to send that out by email later today. Corky?
Yeah, so we're going to post it on the dissemination site. We just want to make sure that everything is correct that we have so far.
Right. Let me put it this way. If there is need and interest, we can set up an additional technical call that really would get down into technical details for people having problems on individual machines. We can try to answer some of those questions today, but we may they may be details that we literally need to kind of go through step by step, and would probably want to keep today's questions a little bit more broadly focused. One other thing that we plan to do. All of the curriculum centers use a web-based collaboration system called Basecamp. Probably a number of you have seen it or are familiar with it. You set up different projects in Basecamp. We have a number of existing projects that we use for our work. We're going to set up a new project in Basecamp for all of the lab leads. One of the nice features of Basecamp is that you can very easily go to the website, which is where all the emails are stored, so you don't need to keep them on your machine and all the different threads, and look at specific threads on different topics. So people will be able to post problems that they have there, and we will try to answer them in a timely manner. Also for collaboration, so for joint troubleshooting. If we can all really try to approach this project, as a collaboration of us all working together on our common goal of making health IT education better and more pertinent and more hands-on, then hopefully we can achieve a better long-term outcome. And we'll certainly keep you appraised of new opportunities that come. For example, we've heard that the VA is itself interested in improving its educational materials, and there may be opportunities to tap into things like that. So at this point, I'm going to ask if the operator could start putting the people in the queue up, and then we, the panelists or whatever, will do our best to answer various questions.
Thank you. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. Please record your name clearly when prompted. To withdraw a request, you may press star, then two. Once again, to ask a question, please press star one. One moment. Larry Rodas, you may ask your question.
Yes. Have you tried doing this instead of within the X64-bit, do it as a virtual Windows XP setup within Windows 7 64? And likewise, have you tried doing this in a virtual box environment?
I'll take that question. I have not personally done the Windows 7, certain versions of Windows 7 have an XP mode, so you could be running Windows 7 64-bit and run a Windows XP 32-bit program within that. And what it is essentially is a Windows PC, or whatever they call it. It's a virtualized version of XP running on top of Windows. We have done an install, and that did work successfully, but we haven't done extensive testing. My point on that is that it really shouldn't be necessary. You should be able to get it to work running directly on Windows 7 64-bit with some of the workarounds that I described before. In terms of running it in other virtual environments, that is definitely possible. That's how I've been doing most of my testing, actually, and it works fine. I happen to be using VMware quite a bit on my Macintosh laptop and have not had any problems.
You know, actually, this is Bill Hirsch. If some of you out there are interested in trying different configurations, then sharing your results on this Basecamp project that we're going to set up, that would be great. We also do have the ability to connect to query the people in the VA. It's not a formal VA project, so our ability to get to their time is somewhat limited, but when specific questions come up, they've been very helpful. But that'll be another approach if people want to try doing this on their own.
Okay, if you can still hear me, I will be trying that both under VirtualBox and the Virtual XP environment.
Great. Please let us know how it works.
I sure will.
Okay.
Yeah. Could I add a comment there, Bill? It's Larry.
Oh, hey, Larry.
Hi. One of the things we found is that Windows Home Edition, which many students have on their machine, was problematic. One of the solutions we did is through our MSDNA license, we got upgrades to Windows Professional for students. And if you set up a virtual XP machine, it works wonderfully, and basically once you set up the virtual PC in the XP mode, the install is very smooth.
Mm-hmm. And this is Patty. Can I add a comment?
Sure.
Also, we tested it on the cheesy little the Windows netbooks that you get like in a box of cereal these days, or for like $200 from Best Buy or something, and they come equipped with Starter and Windows 7 Starter, and it actually runs, because Windows 7 Starter is 32-bit, it runs very smoothly even on those little tiny cheesy netbooks.
Great, and let me actually introduce Larry Scott from Lane Community College, who's joined us as one of the moderators. Good. We're ready to take the next question.
Thank you. Allie with Estes County College. I'm sorry, they've disconnected. Next would be Debbie Rulo.
I'm sorry, I tried to withdraw my question. You just answered it. Thank you.
Thank you. One moment. Sharon Downs-Thomas.
Hi. My question is, I'm having difficulties running it. We are using Windows 2010, and I understand that you don't have the instructions for doing that. And what occurred when I did try to install, the first prompt where you, when you're installing it in the DOS mode, it comes up and it locks. When it says press any key, it will not go any further. So my question is there any answers for Windows 2010?
I'll chime in. Windows 2010 is not actually, maybe you're thinking Office 2010. The latest version of the Windows operating system is Windows 7, or perhaps Windows 2008 R2. Maybe there's another version that's in beta for the operating system. But regardless of what, if you're installing on some modern version of Windows, and you are, and by the way, I one of the questions that was asked was, does this run on Windows 2003 server or Windows 2008? In all of our testing, it does run fine. You still have the same workarounds. For example, Windows 2008 is akin to Windows 7, so you have the user account control, and you have to follow the same process to make sure that it runs as an administrator. If it's pausing and not allowing you to press a key, it could be that you don't have the focus of your window in the command box, in which case actually clicking where you would press the key and then pressing a key may solve your problem.
Okay. I've tried, but I will try that again and see what that is. And I'm sorry, you are correct. It is the Office 2010, and we are using Windows 7.
So, yeah, that's what I would suggest, is make sure that you have the focus in the window when it asks you to press the key.
Okay. Thank you.
Great.
Tyrell Bostall.
Hi. My question is, we're installing this software on XP, and it works fine, but when we go to create an image and deploy it, it looks like it still wants the old name from what the image was created on. So I kind of heard you touch base a little bit on an entry that you have to add to the host file, that you would have a TIPS document in regards to that. Is that an issue that you guys are aware of or have experienced?
This is, and I'll take this again. I did some testing last night with imaging. We haven't done a lot of testing specifically with Ghost, and I suppose you're doing XP and you're doing a sysprep, and so
correct.
You are actually experiencing a problem where what exactly is the error?
So it works fine, but you create the image, you sysprep it. When you go to deploy it, obviously you're going to rename the computer, and when all that's done, it just doesn't work. If you look at the cache on the taskbar, you know, it's grayed out. It's not available. And it will work if you change that computer's name back to the name it had when the image was being created. So it looks like it still wants that name when it was installed.
Okay, so this is a very good point, and this is a very important use case. Obviously, if you're going to deploy it to a lab, you don't want to have to be installing it one at a time. I suspect there's probably something in the registry settings with cache that is pointing, hard-coded to that computer name.
Uh-huh.
And in my testing, I think I left the computer name the same, which would obviously not be a good test. So we need to follow up on that.
Okay. And is there a number I can call to follow up, or is it you guys going to be providing that on the, you know, TIPS document that you said that you might be issuing out?
Yeah, we'll prioritize that for something adding to the TIPS document and let you know either one, if it can't be done, or what exactly the workaround is.
Okay.
Anthony Volterra.
Yeah, hi. I have a colleague who installed, and after the installation, none of the icons showed up, and she was wondering if it would be just best to try a reinstall.
I'll take that one again. Most typically, if you do the install and you don't have icons, it's probably successfully installed cache. And the reason why it doesn't finish the rest of the installation is probably user account control, and you're not running the installation as an administrator, following the steps as they're detailed in the Windows Vista and 7 installation guide. So if you just insert the DVD and you don't even know that there's some installation instructions, you're naturally going to click on the Install All button. It'll look like it's working, but in the back end, there will actually be errors. It won't be able to create those files, for example, on the desktop that looks like the icons aren't showing up. So my recommendation, it's most likely the case that they are not running the installation as an administrator.
Okay, thank you.
Actually, if, Mike, maybe you could clarify then. So should they do the install over again, or should they just do the install Vista? Should they do any uninstalling? Because I think I've heard this come up once or twice as well.
Yes, I would go ahead and do the uninstall, which should uninstall cache successfully, and reinstall, being sure to follow the instructions in the guide to run as an administrator.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Mike Clendenin.
Yes, how you guys doing?
Great. Hi, Mike. This is Corky.
Hey, how's it going? Good talking to you again. We got several questions, but I'll just ask one at a time here. Is there a possibility of running this in a server-delivered environment?
So I'll take that one again, and I'm sorry I should have addressed that. That was one of the first questions we had. It is possible to do that. That's certainly how the VA runs their installation. However, we have designed our components in component, what is our component, 7, so that we are expecting that each student has their own copy of the database. So the problem that you may run into in some of the exercises is if you have lots of students doing the same exercise at the same time, they may be making changes to the data, which would then impact the instructions that we've given them. They may not see what we expect them to see based on it starting with the a fresh copy of the database.
Okay. Yes, this is Patty Abbott from Hopkins. Just to expand on that a little bit, there may be some solutions to that in the future, particularly if maybe you talk to Norma Morganti, who's from one of the other college consortiums, community college consortia, or also we're, as Bill said, if we can start to exchange these ideas together on some kind of a share board or something, we think that if there is a way that you can assign an individual .dat file to each student, that may work, so that problem that Mike was just talking about wouldn't happen. Each student, it would be a one-to-one relationship between the student and their .dat file.
All right, well, that gives us something to kind of work towards then. On a side note, does the Vista system require Internet access itself?
No. This is Patty again. That's no, it does not. That's why for some of our folks who don't have Internet connectivity, that fully compressed DVD that we sent out, if you make a copy of that and send it out, a student who has just a standalone laptop with a DVD driver can run the whole thing right from there.
Yeah, I can actually attest that I've done it completely disconnected from the Internet. And, in fact, that brings up another point. If anyone's trying to run this on Windows XP Home, which is formerly not supported by Cache, it actually still works. You just can't do any networking things. Cache makes some networking calls, but as long as you solely run it on an individual machine, it works fine under Windows XP Home, which I know is an old system, but many people still using it.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Kathy Lee.
Yes, Kathy, Pima College. This is great. Did you say that this does work on a Macintosh now or not?
This is Patty. It will not work on a Macintosh unless you're booting into, like, the Windows virtual machine, which a lot of our folks do here at Hopkins. I mean, Mike, can you speak to that? You're a Mac-er.
Yeah, it is not a native Mac application. So you have to either use virtual technology like VMware or Parallels running on top of Mac OS X in order to launch this as a virtual machine, or you can use Bootcamp and install a version of Windows that runs natively on your Mac computer.
Okay, and then there was somebody mentioned about imaging. I know that you addressed that and you hadn't tested it with all of them. What about Altiris? I don't know if you're familiar with Altiris. That's something that we use here for imaging. It's similar to Ghost, but not the same. It's actually better. Do you know anything? Have you got any background on that?
So But you would have the same problems with Altiris or whatever kind of deployment solution that you're making. It seems the fundamental problem that I understood from the previous caller is that it doesn't deal with the computer name change accurately, and that's going to be a problem regardless of your deployment solution, and that's something we will definitely look into.
Okay. On the if I wanted to run, if I wanted to put this DVD out on a virtual server, and I think you addressed that, then they would all have the same database. Correct? Could they download the whole DB from a virtual server to a desktop?
I think that that's possible. I mean, the way that we've been distributing across the development centers is by putting an ISO up on a shared drive and letting our the five universities pull it down.
Okay.
So we've been sharing it as an ISO, which is a kind of version of a DVD. It's a very large file, and it takes a little bit of skill to know how to convert that ISO into something that you could use to do the installation. The other thing would be to unpack it, and you could even perhaps do it as a zip file, although I don't know what the size limitation is with a zip file. It would complicate things for students to know how to deal with that file and to be able to download given the size of the file.
Although we're actually going to explore that for future versions so we don't have to mail out so many DVDs. I mean, we'll continue to mail DVDs to people who can't sustain a 2 gigabyte download, but we may actually use that ISO option to get future versions to people.
And if we do, we will provide very clear instructions.
Okay. Yes, I'm very familiar with the ISO. I've done those myself. So it would actually just be another step of teaching the students how to make a DVD from an ISO.
And it's really easy, frankly.
Yeah.
It's not rocket science.
Does the VMware version matter on the server end?
No, it should not matter.
Okay.
What was the question?
Oh, if the VMware version matters on the server end?
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
All right. That's all for me. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Keith Kirkland.
Yes. Hi.
Hello. I have a question regarding access. When we try to log in on the page, access code and password, I received the error. You are not able to log in. I have no access code, correct access code and password.
The correct access codes and passwords are in the latest help documents that are on the NTDC website. Do you know which ones aren't working for you?
Yeah, actually, I have that already, the document in the end, as they mentioned in the paper. I tried that nurse one, doctor one, and other coordinator one. That all five user access code or password are invalid.
Keith?
Then finally, I received login error, access error.
Okay. One thing that has happened quite a bit is that the period at the end of the verify code is not being entered.
No, I have the verify code. I enter in the screen, but after that, I receive the error. The error is login error is invalid.
Did you put a period? So it's doctor one period.
Perfect. I did same thing. Doctor and Doctor One, same thing.
It's Doctor One and Doctor One, period.
There's a period after the Doctor One for the verify code.
That's it.
Okay.
That's it.
That's it. But, okay, we have different five interfaces for the doctors, for the nurse, for the coordinator. So what are the different five components? They have different five access?
Yeah, they have different privileges. So, for example, many nurses cannot order a medication. So if you sign in as a nurse and you try to order a chemotherapeutic agent, it will not let you do it. So it's kind of like role-based access. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
Perfect. I put period. That's it.
Jacqueline Gibbons.
Hello. Hi, this is Jacqueline Gibbons from Northern Virginia Community College. We have a couple of questions. The first question is that I got a link to the VISTA for the presentation you gave. We didn't get that until 2:30, so I just want to make sure that that's going to be available for us to access at a later time. And then we have a the computer tech person, IT person, has a couple of questions that's in the program that he'd like to ask about installing the software, installing the DVD.
Can you repeat the first question, dear?
I'll repeat it. The question is whether the video that Mike put together, because she didn't get the link late, we will put that video on the dissemination site so people can download it, which just goes through the steps in installing in Windows 7.
In addition, we'll put the audio from this call up along with that.
Okay.
And let me say one thing about that demo. The demo video is just one example. It doesn't go through every variable. The best resource to use to know how to do an installation on Windows 7 is the instructions.
Okay, I do understand that. I just wanted to make sure that that would be available since we didn't get an opportunity to see it. And, however, Mr. Benjamin Tynes also has a question from our colleague.
Yes, we have problems with your broker server. We keep getting error messages saying that the shared broker server session manager has encountered a problem. Now, we do not get that error on all computers, just some of them. And on these units, they are running XP Professional at 32-bit. And we were wondering, would it be necessary to have it reinstalled on these particular units?
I think the only one of us who can answer that is Mike. And I'll, if he can, I don't know.
I think, you know, that's a very specific kind of use case we'd have to look at. It sounds like, though, the cache is actually essentially crashing. You're getting this error. That's not something I've seen before. That would be something we'd need to follow up on.
Can you please email that question to ntdcinfo@ohsu.edu?
Yes, I will email that today after the meeting. Yeah.
And we can work with you directly, I mean, even if we just go in and do a one-on-one or whatever to help you solve that.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
And we have one more question from our sister Dave.
Hello, my name is Sheila Peterson. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you.
My question is, the patient population that we now have in the database, I want to know how many patients are loaded, patients are loaded into the system, and when are they revised? Because if the students use them, I want to make sure that the fields are available to teach other students and use the VISTA software.
This is Patty from Hopkins, and that's a terrific question and something we've actually been struggling with because for Component 7, which is the working with HIT systems, we really had to actually hand enter, frankly, a lot of the data because if we wanted, these are not live patient charts, and there was the VA could not really release any sort of patient-related data to us, even anonymized, they couldn't. So we're really limited. And, of course, you know, when I was building some of the lessons and I wanted to show sort of like achievement of certain quality measures where you have to look at a trend or a pattern over time, they weren't in there. So we actually had to construct patient-related data to fit the actual lessons in Component 7. So in the it's a great question. It's something we're really struggling with, and what we're doing right now is paying CAC programmers to hand enter data until we can find a more efficient way of doing it. And even the VA doesn't have a way to do it. So they actually, for their VIHU University, they hand enter case data, and so we're going to use some funding from another grant stream we have to look at importing de-identified patient data
But I think, and Bill and Larry might be able to speak to this, through the configuration back end, and maybe if we all work together, we can figure a way to import patient data through the roll and scroll back end.
Well, actually, I was going to say, Patty, this may be also a potential answer, too, is that one of the icons is Refresh Vista, mm-hmm. that you basically have to shut down cache, and then it will restore the database to how it was originally delivered on the DVD. So that's another way that in certain circumstances might help with that. We too, are very interested in getting new data, and I think that's something we're going to work on over time. It kind of goes back to sort of the philosophy that we're taking on this project, of a kind of collaborative effort with you, and we have great interest ourselves in improving this product over time. We don't view this as something we're just giving to you all and then saying, okay, we're done. I mean, we have a lot of interest in trying to not only make this more usable as it is, but also improving it over time. I'm going to ask, we're approaching the end of the hour. We can probably go a little bit longer, but I don't know what the issues are. But I'm going to ask the operator, do you know how many more people are in the queue?
Sir, at this time I show two more questions in the queue.
Okay, why don't we go ahead and take those two, and then we will follow up. I'll explain that all when we're done. So next question.
Is Gary Hires.
Hello. I have a question about is there a reason that the students would need to install the system themselves, or if I'm able to create my own virtual machine that I give to the students and they can just run the virtual machine on their local computer as opposed to them actually having to install the system on the various operating systems?
I'll take a crack at that one. I think for the two components that have had materials developed to date, 7 and 11, probably don't require student installation. So if you're able to come up with a solution that just starts it up for them, that is probably good. There's an additional lab component, the materials of which will become available with this second 50% that is slated for release on Friday, that will involve some installation. And those folks aren't on this call, since I'm sure there's going to be questions with their materials and so forth, we'll need to engage them. The title of that component is Installing and Maintaining Electronic Health Records, so there will be somewhat of an installation component. But for what we've done to date, it's probably not necessary. If you can come up with a way that your students don't have to go through this, that's probably good.
Okay. Well, wait a minute. This is Patty. I have a question that maybe both of you guys can answer related to that. So if you deploy that from your server so that the students don't have to do the full install, where is the DAT file living? Because as Bill was mentioning, when a student goes in and, like, resolves a reminder, the next student that comes in behind them, if they're using that same DAT file, the reminder will already be resolved. So I hope that makes sense, but I'm just kind of – I know that the DAT files have to be kept separate.
Well, I know if I was trying to develop a standalone virtual machine so that way the student doesn't have to install the Vista system on a local machine, it's running in a virtualized machine. So that way I could just disseminate that virtual machine to all my students, and they would all be independent.
I got it. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I learn something new every day.
Yeah, no, actually, if you actually get that up and running, we would be very grateful for you letting us know, how you did it, because I think for these set of exercises, that would be very helpful.
Well, I know virtual VMware produces a thing called VM Player, will allow you to create what's called a virtualized application, where basically you set up a system and you install everything, but then you send out that player to all these students, and it's just like they're running another machine without them having to do the installation and configuring part. So I saw it as a solution that we might could use as long as we weren't requiring the students to learn how to install the Vista system.
Yeah, well, that's not part of the existing exercises. Please do follow up with us offline.
I'll reach out to you, Gary. This is
Corky. Okay. Yeah, so will I. I think you're going to be sorry.
You're our new best friend.
Good.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I think there's one more question.
Yes, Darla Branda.
Yes, hi. I have a question that's sort of related, but a little more basic than the previous question you just addressed. Our college is offering this program completely online. So one of the problems we've been trying to resolve is that our students, our students will have to load this on their machine at home, and they're going to be probably all over the country. Most of them here in California, I think. But due to the potential problems with the installation process, I've been told by college administration that we cannot provide technical support to these students because if a problem would arise that would damage their computer, then we could be held liable, or at least that's the way the college, feels about the situation. So my main question is, will there be any technical support available for students if they encounter a problem during installation?
Because our resources are limited for providing technical support, we would prefer that you would work with the technical support at your colleges. I mean, we do understand this issue. We haven't had any instance so far where any damage has resulted. I mean, it seems that when you uninstall it, it pretty much puts your system back to how it was. It doesn't leave things on the disk or install any little rogue applications or anything. I know that some colleges might take that point of view, that might be something also that we need to work with you offline about. Our resources, to support that are limited. We will work through your lab leads, you can contact us. We would prefer not to have students directly contacting us, I think just because of the resource issue. But if they could go through your lab leads and have them contact us, and then we can try to work with you on it.
Okay. I was real interested in what the previous speaker was talking about with the VM player. That might be a possible solution for us as well. So
can I chime in here? Going back to the question about distributing the VMs, which is a good way of having the students not have to deal with the installation themselves. The one thing you had to be careful of there is you're also distributing a Windows operating system, and you had to be very careful with the licensing and whatever the.
Oh, right.
You
don't want to get in trouble.
If you have an IT department and who is saying, no, we don't want to touch these student machines, and it's good that they can get away with that, maybe you put it back on the IT department and ask them if they could come up with some solution that would get this to them, similar to maybe not distributing VMs, but the latest and greatest thing is virtual desktop infrastructure, VDIs, where you actually deliver, they connect to a server and they pull down a virtualized desktop. And I'm not sure how your IT department may be, but that may be a solution that you'd go back with them and propose.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Great. Well, good. I think that wraps up all the questions. We really thank you all for working with us on this and overcoming just some of the limitations we have of software that we actually don't support ourselves, and that was given to us by the VA. So we've taken minutes of the meeting, which we will distribute.
We have an audio.
Oh, that's right. We have an audio. We'll also distribute other things. We'll set up this Basecamp site for all of the lab leads. You'll get an email about that in the next few days. And we look forward to continuing to work with you all and taking good advantage of this system and improving it over time. So I don't have anything further to say. I don't know if any of the other panelists do. If not, I think we'll adjourn the call and follow up with you all virtually. So thank you all again for participating.